It's Oztober, a celebration of all things Australian music this month. And that led us to thinking this would be the perfect time to have an extended chat with a good friend of the show that we've only ever scratched the surface with. Rock photographer David Anderson, who's made the border his home, joins us in studio. And finally, we can knuckle down and get some
serious dirt, yes. David. That's what we want.
Hello, Dave.
Please don't scratch my surface. How are you?
Yeah, really good. So as Matt mentioned, Oztober happening at the moment on Triple M. And you have had the pleasure, or not, of photographing so many Aussie music icons.
Mostly was a pleasure.
Mostly.
Yeah.
And we'll get to a little bit of that a little bit down the track. But Australian music generally, I mean, you've photographed international artists, of course, as well. But where do you rank Aussie music on the whole?
Aussie beer barn rock, I put right up at the top. Angels, Screaming Jets, bands that I saw when I first came here, my first experience, they were like stadium quality rock bands in a pub.
Yeah.
Called Chisel, you know, who are touring again.
Yes.
Ironically, I mean, that's a show you have to see before you cark it. So I've always said the rock bands are great. Some of the pop artists were, you know, the boy bands and stuff, teen stuff, it could be a little bit hit and miss, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, our rock guys are. Have you seen the Angels?
Yes.
I have, yeah, but not with Doc. I've only seen them with Dave Gleason.
Yeah, I've seen them with Doc as well.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, just, you know, an energy that you just normally need a stadium.
Yeah, yeah. Well, wasn't yours, your experience of seeing the Angels, was at a Blue Light Disco? Wasn't
yeah,
it?
So wow. I told this story last week, but Blue Light Disco in Brisbane, I was 15. It was an underage gig, obviously. And, of course, because it was a Blue Light Disco run by the Queensland Police, your parents were happy to drop you off and then pick you up. Oh, the shenanigans we got up to. But the Angels were playing at this Blue Light Disco. And the floor was sprung. So it was a ballroom dancing floor.
It would have been bouncing too.
It was bouncing. You could stand still and you were bouncing up and down because everyone was just going crazy for the Angels. It was amazing.
Yeah, I imagine the language might have been a bit,
sure.
If your parents knew, might have been a bit confusing.
Yeah, whatever.
It
was an education, they're only words.
Yeah.
So you were born here, but then you were raised for quite a number of years over in the States.
Yeah.
But were you exposed to Aussie music before you came out? I mean, were you?
Yeah. So I was that guy that was surprised when he found out AC/DC weren't American. I mean, they were, you know, an institution. And I was also put onto Midnight Oil very early in their piece. And when I was a teenager, you know, one of the cool kids had this very eccentric world music sort of, records on vinyl. And he showed us this Midnight Oil record and put it on. I was impressed. And he had a Midnight Oil shirt too, I think. So he was the...
Was it the one with the big hand on it?
No, I think it was before that.
Okay. Because that's one that's sort of so iconic, that album cover.
This would have been 1979,
oh,
maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, this is a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
So I grew up in a big university town, huge university town. And there was a constant stream of bands came through from around the world and played in the sort of the smaller venues like Psychedelic Furs and some really cool stuff like that. So we had exposure to it.
Yep.
But everything else was American. So, but yeah, Midnight Oil was an eye-opener.
Well, I remember seeing you at the Midnight Oil concert at Gateway Lakes. You were doing officially photographing, weren't you?
No.
Was that for Midnight Oil?
Good looking. No, Farnham.
Oh, sorry. That was, yeah. Of course. It was John Farnham again.
We'll
what am I
that
saying?
In a sec. Yeah, yeah.
So and that was for the Red Hot Summer Tour. That's right.
Yes.
And I saw you and you were there with all, it was the first time I've seen you in like full photographer mode.
Combat gear.
Yeah. And I'm getting around taking photos. Of course. I don't know what I was thinking. But you're John's official photographer and have been for a number of years.
Yeah, since 1999 was the first time I did anything for him, I think.
99.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's so 20 years. And what's he like to work with, John?
He's you know, if you've seen him on TV or whatever, and you imagine he's a nice guy, he is. He's
it's so good to hear, isn't
it? Yeah, isn't it?
Well, I think if you want to know, how do you last 50 years in the music industry at that level?
Yeah.
Is everybody loves you. Everybody that works for him, his crew, it's everybody around him, the record company, they all have a respect for him. He's, you know, he's a big star, but on a just a pure face-to-face level, he's just a great guy.
Yeah, that is fantastic to hear. Now, a lot of people would be intrigued, I'm sure, as to how you got into it in the first place. So is it actually over in the States that you started your photographic journey with?
Yeah, I'm a frustrated musician. I'm the musician with no musical ability whatsoever.
like I hear you.
I can't even tap my foot. I'm the guy at the wedding that has 11 beers and then dances and then people...
Gotcha.
You know, wow, ugly. So so in the States, I had a lot of friends that were in bands because I've always sort of hung around musicians. And I got a camera, again, in the 70s and started taking photos of their shows and stuff at a club level. I sort of put it away when I came back to Australia, but I was working in music stores, guitar stores, and again, frustrated musician. And I ended up, I worked at Brash's in Sydney, and I was with Harvey James from Sherbert Work there, and there was all these high-level studio musos there, and they sort of pushed me into it. Like, I photographed Aerosmith when they came into the store, Michael Jackson, Paul McCartney. This was before I was actually a photographer.
Yeah.
So I guess,
you just asked them, oh, do you mind if I take your photo?
Yeah, I've never had any that kind of place in most people's heads that says, don't ask that question. I don't have that. So I'm just
which is perfect.
Yeah, let's do this.
Yeah.
And so by the time I got to the point of, I started with Street Press in Sydney, which was a wonderful period in the music industry, I think. You know, there's free magazines everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. So this is the 80s, is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so mid 80s. So I would go to a gig or they would get me into a gig. That was the hard part to start, was getting into the shows. And they would make a call, put your name on the door, and I'd go shoot black and white film, ironically, and make some prints and take them in. And that's how I got started.
So clearly they were well received. And then I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, did people then ask for you to photograph them? Is that sort of how it went from there?
Yeah, I got very lucky very early on. This is the sort of the story of my career, right place, right time. I suppose that's how it works for everybody. But remember Who Weekly magazine?
Oh, sure yes. Do.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I don't know what they do now. They may be kind of a trash weekly. I don't even know.
Yeah.
But
they used to be pretty.
When they started here, it was highbrow.
Yeah, wasn't
very,
it?
I loved it.
Black and white and very, very... full-on photo department, very demanding, great people to work for. But somebody I know from music industry got me an appointment with the then new photo editor, and she'd just come out from America. I didn't have a portfolio or anything, but I laid out on the floor of her office about 15 black and white prints and, you know, Aerosmith and some local band and that sort of stuff I'd been shooting. And I think she walked in, she had a look at me and had a glance at that and didn't say anything. And I had that vibe that this isn't going well.
Mm.
And then she said, oh, Aerosmith, I love those guys. And I was hired. I worked for them for 10 years.
Right.
I learned photography on
the
their
job.
Dime. You know what I mean?
Yes.
They send me to work. And I was like, oh, God, what do I do next?
Yeah. Hang on. Try this.
Yes. I could see you, Lou, as being a rock photographer. Like, you'd love it because Lou's gotten into photography and I could, and you love music, and I could see you being swept away in a similar way, I'm sure, as you did.
Yeah, I just don't think, I haven't got the front. People might think I have, but I get a little bit sort of shy in that situation sometimes and feel...
With celebrities?
Yeah, and just feel a little bit awkward about asking if I can... Yeah. And whereas you can't be like that. You've just got to front up.
Sorry, no, there's two kinds of photographers in the business, and there is that person there that's very quiet. There was a young lady, I can't remember her name, used to photograph the Jets when they started occasionally, like I was, and... She was small and she could walk into a room and nobody would know she was there. And she was getting all these amazing candid photos where I can't hide. I go into the room and I can't
gigantic.
Hide.
How tall are you, Dave?
6'4".
Yeah.
And so is the vest and
no hiding.
In your face attitude.
Yeah.
And candid shots I always struggled to get. But again, going back to Who Weekly days, they wanted really good candid shots.
Yeah.
So there's a balance there. And a lot of the back then, the high-end studio photographers were the quiet, technical,
artistic.
So there's hope, is what I'm saying. So,
thanks, David.
We know you can.
You're always so encouraging. I love that. But look, just the being in that environment and hearing the stories too. You must have heard some great stories in your day.
Oh God. Can't even remember half of them.
I'm in the 80s as well, which is a decade, you know.
That we've all forgotten.
For its, you know, a little bit of hedonism and the like.
Yeah. Oh, no, there was no. Everybody was very well behaved, myself included. No, it's a, from a personality point of view, you're saying that so the confrontational in your face will get you a certain look and the quiet, retiring type such as yourself.
Oh, sure.
But I mean, you are on the radio. You know that, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do. But do you know what I mean? And I know people do think that's weird when I say that. But I don't know. I think it's just a bit of. I do get a bit starstruck sometimes, and it's just one of those things. I think
point,
we all
though.
Do.
I mean, do you not? Did you not get starstruck at all?
Well, I'll tell you a story early on, going back to those record store days. So Aerosmith were when I was a kid. I mean, they were my heroes.
Yeah.
What's the guitarist's name? Gosh, it's memory. But anyway,
I wouldn't even know.
You know, these guys were my heroes. They were just, and I met them. So, you know, at the record store, and I said to this chap, I'm a huge fan, and it's great to finally. And he just turned his nose up at me. It was like, you know, you're bothering me, sort of thing. And I worked out then and there. I think maybe that was a good hard lesson that you just need to maintain yourself in a certain fashion. You've got to get through the first barrier of
because they wouldn't want Joe Perry.
Yeah. Thank
so
you.
So they wouldn't want someone fawning all over them, right?
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
They,
not.
They don't want. I would imagine they kind of wanted to be. They don't want to be disrespected, but they want to be treated like a person.
No, I think with the Australians in particular, they definitely do not want to be fawned over. You know, the tall poppy thing is very real.
Yes,
and so I've always treated the Australian artists like. That guy you know and that girl
Prince
you know.
But Prince maybe slightly differently.
He's treated with more of a more immediate level of respect again until they sort of address you.
Gotcha.
And it's not hard and fast rules. And I don't, you know, I made it up as I went along, to be honest. So,
yeah. I wanted to ask you about, apart from all the musicians that you've photographed, you've also photographed Molly Meldrum.
Yes.
And
Molly Meldrum.
I love the photograph that you've got on your website, dsaphoto.com. If you want to have a look at some of David's work, you need to go and have a look. But the black and white photo you've got of Molly there, and he's got this awesome handbag over his shoulder. I have that bag, that exact bag.
That's
and,
so awesome.
And it plays music.
Does it?
Yeah, it's got speakers in it. Those
it's
speakers,
like a ghetto blaster bag.
Those speakers are actually speakers, and you can play the radio through
you
it.
You never told me this.
Yeah, I'll go. I'll
that's
dig
awesome.
It out. I'll bring it in.
Yes,
I'll bring it into
please.
Work.
Well, in the Australian music industry, once you're working at it on any kind of regular basis, you're bumping into Molly all the time. So he was at so many parties and media things. And I actually worked on one of his TV shows for a while as the photographer as well.
Mm.
But the first time I ever spoke to Molly, we had some concert and he had the most amazing jacket on. It was Pharaoh painted in gold on the back
of
his
jacket. Yes, because he was mad for Egypt.
Mad for Egypt. And I just tapped him on the shoulder and I knew who he was, but I just saw him as somebody in the media, really. And I said, that is the most amazing jacket. It's fantastic. And he sort of looked over his shoulder at me and he was a bit awkward. And I think Molly's quite shy.
He is quite shy.
If you go back to the Prince, when he's interviewing the Prince and he sort of
couldn't handle it. Oh, yeah, Prince Charles,
He, even late, you know, recently, he's always got that little bit of, I don't know, I think it's what makes him so successful. He's so human
and
in a
so
way.
Endearing. Yeah. That's right. Because he's that sort of self-effacing kind of attitude that he has.
Yeah,
yeah,
well,
I agree.
Sitting around having a drink with him and talking with him on a social level, like he loves music. He loves these people.
Yeah.
He's like a teenage fan in some ways, you know. And I think if you don't, like Matt, we had a chat the other day. I can tell you love particular bands and stuff, and you as well, Lou. And if you don't, you wouldn't do this, would you?
No, that's true. Very true. It's funny what you say about Molly. I ran into him in Bangkok in the night markets.
Oh, look out.
In the night markets in Bangkok. True story. And we were looking through pirate cassette and videotapes, right? And
I not just, purchasing, I was, though.
No, of course not. And I was next to him and I saw the hat, which made me look up. And I went, oh, Molly, hi. And he goes, hi, how you going? I said, yeah, good. I said, is there anything good? He said, oh, yeah. He said, the quality's a bit dodgy. And that was our little conversation. He was so lovely, though, and very quiet.
Yeah.
But I didn't make a big deal about who he was. Do you know what I mean? I guess it was that I just had to say hello. Oh, hi, Molly. Hi.
Well, I think the reason that's one of my favourite portraits I've ever taken is of Molly. And the reason I like it is that it's him.
Yes.
And as a portrait photographer, sometimes it's hard to capture the real person behind whatever front they've put up. But Molly is, you know, like I said, he's very human. The jacket he's wearing, the bag, everything is so him.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's interesting you say that. I'm definitely not in any way a photography aficionado. I like a nice photo, but I could never tell you why, that kind of thing. But I'm just looking at a few of the people you've got here, and you were just saying how you want to really capture that artist as a person. Well, so let's just go through a few and just how you've managed to do it. So Ian Moss.
Yes, that's what I'm looking at.
You have captured Ian Moss because he when you look at him, he looks like the shy, almost retiring man that he is. But at the same time, you feel like if that guy got on stage, he could go crazy, which he does. There's something about that picture.
Well, he is very quiet. He's unnervingly quiet. So I had a day in the studio with him to do those pictures. And, you know, you need to build a rapport with people fairly quickly to do what I do. And it was really hard. It was like flinging my personality against a brick wall. Mm-hmm. And I think where I broke through is he pulled that jacket out, that snakeskin jacket in that photo. And I said, and I mean this, it's like one of the most rock star.
Oh,
and
so
I'm like,
rock star.
God, I wish I could wear that. But I would look ridiculous. But he looks amazing.
He does. He looks so comfortable. And then just above it is capturing to perfection, the way Dave Gleason, I'm sure, was at the start of his career. Like, there's just an energy and a ferocity in that picture.
Well,
almost
it's his most,
eyes.
I believe, and I'm going to say it, it's the most famous photo of Dave Gleason. Whenever you see that, instantly you just think Dave Gleason, Screaming Jets at the beginning of their run.
Well, that was my first, you know, my first famous photo.
Yeah.
And that's what started me on the portrait photography path. That photo broke me into doing stuff for the band. So I hung around with the Screaming Jets and they let me hang around with them and do photos. They were very new then. They were just breaking through.
Yeah.
And I would go do shows and go backstage with them and I experimented at length, you know, learning the trade sort of thing. And they would stand there and just do it.
Yeah.
And so I love Dave Gleason. He's an amazing human being.
He's a great guy.
He stand there. If you talk to him, sorry, Dave, with respect, sometimes he can sound a little bit dumb, but he is amazingly intelligent. But I think he's I'm in a rock band. I'm going to be kind of simple here, but he is so not.
Enthusiasm too. Like he gets so swept up in stuff, doesn't he? That's what I love about him. When he's talking to other people, he gets so swept up in the conversation.
Well, I'll tell you another thing about him. Dave Gleason put me on to country music. So I'm just quietly, just kind of like country music a little bit.
Sure.
And one day,
Triple M Country, we've got you covered.
The morning after sort of a bunch of shows, we were at his place. First thing in the morning, he was playing Charlie Pride so loud you could hardly breathe. And I was just like, wow, this is really good. And then like country music? And he's like, yeah, I love it, you know?
Yeah, See, because a lot of these guys are true music lovers, aren't they? And you hear that a lot, actually. People who are in a certain genre and they listen to a wide spectrum of music and you'd never think that they would.
Oh, he has very broad musical taste. Yeah. I mean, what I've heard them play, on stage they're, you know, pure barn rock, like I said, but I think there is influence that's there in the country and and other genres for sure.
Yeah. How's the Nick Cave one there too, Luke? Just captured perfectly the way you'd expect Nick Cave to be. What's he like?
Well, the whole music industry has the music industry has a total infatuation with that guy. And I heard the music and stuff, and I'm like, you know, it's interesting, the deep voice, whatever. But I never really got it. And then what's that song he did with Kylie Minogue?
Yeah, Where the Wild Roses Grow.
I just thought,
for
Kylie, that's the best thing she's ever done.
I agree.
It was amazing. And I thought, well, okay, wow, the guy's pretty good, you know? And then I met him there at the Arias, and he is so cool. He doesn't try and be cool. I think he just
effortless cool.
Effortless cool. It's like Jeff Goldblum at 8 instead of 11, but he's he's there.
Yes,
he is very like that. Actually, that's a really good analogy because he's just. It's not like he's trying at all. There's no, I think if I put this on, it's going to make me look cool. Mm. Like, he would look cool in the nude.
Well, I think
you know what I mean.
Well, I hadn't thought of it
like that.
Have
you done any of those types of
not that I can mention here.
He's just got, there's just an air, an aura about him that gives him that cool.
Well, he's intimidating too. So he's a fairly big guy. And, you know, backstage at the Arias, you know, it's a smorgasbord of who's who in the music industry any one year. But when Nick was there, there's sort of a quiet that sort of follows him around. And I think a lot of these people that are mad about him are afraid to speak to him.
Do you think?
Yes.
Maybe he's brushed them off in the past.
And you know, he's big and brooding doesn't worry me, but...
Well, which is funny because as you mentioned, you're a tall guy. But it's funny, by looking at photos, you can't tell whether people are tall or short, unless sometimes if they're next to something you can tell. But a lot of these musicians aren't particularly tall. So I'm surprised
to say that. No, you two are virtually hobbits.
Yeah. Oh, Bono's tiny.
No, well, I thought that and I photographed him. He walked up to me and the band were behind him. And introduced himself, and then my first thought was rudely, "Wow, you're really short." And then the band came up next to him. I thought, "My God, you're all short."
Oh, really? So they all are.
Yeah,
that's
all the exact same 5 foot something nothing.
All right, now before we run out of time, I really do want to talk about some of the. Well, I want to delve into some of the, and we've touched on this before. Some of the worst. People to deal with. Now, it wasn't Christina Aguilera. Yes, it was someone else, wasn't it? Was it Avril Lavigne who was...
Avril Lavigne, incredibly difficult. And she had that indifference, that teen artist indifference to a point... I've never seen anything like it, to where people from... you know, the publicists and stuff were saying to journalists, "Do you really want to talk to her?" Like,
really?
Yes.
Wow.
She just,
because they didn't want to deal with her either.
Well, I don't want to be rude. This may have been a time in her life where maybe she wasn't having any fun in Australia. Yeah. But generally, when the artists come to Australia, the big artists, they go, "Wow, you guys are so laid back, and this is so easy."
Yeah.
You know, where in America or Europe, they work their butts off. Where here, you know, they call it the dessert trolley of the world tour.
Really?
Yeah. But anyway, she was. But I'll give you a story about a local one, actually.
Oh, yes, please.
So, Tim Friedman.
I was going to bring up Tim Friedman, right?
I don't like him, and I don't want to be disrespectful to him. I haven't spent a lot of time around him.
Because I saw him not long ago here, actually.
Yeah.
Over at the Myer Centre.
Oh,
really?
Past him.
Skulking around
Aubrey. I swear it was Tim Friedman.
What was he doing?
I don't know, but I mean,
had he been live and free or something?
Well, maybe they had a gig here. I can't tell you exactly what month it was, but it was within the last 6 months I saw him, and it was definitely Tim Friedman.
Well, so I was the Arias photographer for 21 years, and the Whitlams at their peak came to the Arias, and Gough Whitlam was there. And Gough Whitlam, like, he's, you know, the prime minister. He's a fairly cool sort of guy. And this is how fragile my ego is. At one point, Tim whistled at me, like, come here, to get a photo of him and Gough. Mm. And I was, just since then, like, it's just broken the relationship.
No, I hear you.
I probably need to forgive him, like, again.
Maybe you just need to bring it up next time you see him and say, mate, you whistled me one time. Don't ever do it again.
It was a disrespectful whistle.
It's so disrespectful whistle anyone.
It was this thing between us. Like, he probably doesn't even realize. But I never went out of my way to get a picture of him after that.
Isn't that interesting? No. That some.
I totally get that, though.
Well, I had that with Midnight Oil singer.
Peter Garrett.
Peter Garrett, He barked me one night at Aria's after party, where the publicity people from Sony were just, Peter Garrett was at the party, and they're like bringing all these people over to be photographed with him. And they're hard, these girls, they go hard. And I was kind of saying, you know, let's just back off a bit. Everybody's just, you know, chilling out a bit here, but they wouldn't hear of it. And he turned and sort of snapped at me, "That's enough," like that. And then all the people that worked for Sony looked at me like it was my fault. And I thought, okay, well, you have to, sometimes you got to wear stuff like that. Yeah. You don't want to embarrass anybody. I sort of walked away. But I think 2 or 3 years later at an APRA function or something, he pulled me up and he said, "Do you not like me?" Or something like, "Are, you know," he said, "are we cool?
We're not good."
And I thought, wow, am I hanging on to this? And I, sorry, pathetic, I know.
No, but I think it's an inadvertent thing sometimes. If you feel like, and it, just in life in general, if you feel like someone doesn't like you, you almost avoid them, don't you? Like, what? I mean, you don't. Who wants to be around someone who doesn't like them?
Well, I don't know the word. The Japanese have a word for, it basically means
everything.
Understand the place and your place in it. And I saw this somewhere and I read. And
thanks,
I
sensei.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I can't tell you the word, but just do it.
But I'll do it.
But anyway, so I think it's a very important thing for your job, for my job, for if you're the prime minister, you know, to understand. And so if knowing that in that situation where he snapped at me, I think were the situation reversed, I wouldn't have directed it at me. I would have said calmly, I've
sure.
had enough. Like, can
yeah,
we just
yeah.
can
yeah.
we slow it down? Like,
yeah.
and
I need to have a
me understanding
break.
My place. Yeah. I would have left the room so nobody could pull me up and make me photograph
yes.
him anymore. So,
yeah, yeah. And I guess hindsight's, you know, the
it's
old 2020. It's amazing.
Wonderful thing.
But you've just got to go with the flow when you're in those situations. And I'm guessing, as you've just alluded to, it's a really high pressure situation when you are there photographing an event like that because you're it. You're documenting this whole thing.
For me, there's this balance. There's a very careful balance between wanting to photograph every second the celebrity's in the room to get that one moment and needing to leave them alone and be like indifferent to the point where they might say to me, are you going to get any photos? Like, it's a real careful balance.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. What was your routine like? What was your week-to-week routine like? How crazy was it? I get this, my kind of thinking in my head would be like, you know, you're on planes all the time, you're jetting around the bloody world, you're going crazy.
It's everything happens at the last minute. Some tours were planned. I would be put with the artist, travel with the artist, some of the bigger ones for 4 or 5 days or a week or whatever. And I would know ahead of time to be available these days. But what happened on the day could be anything. And as you can probably tell, I don't have a great memory. So it kind of served me well. And it's sort of like, just somebody tell me what I need to do next and I'll get that
where
done.
I need to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some days are very long, very hard, and you get very worn out. And then you might have a couple of days off and then I would be thinking, oh, my God, I'm unemployed. Somebody please ring.
Yeah, what a unique way of life.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Really,
different all the time. Tell me, back in the days of film, because digital's probably
so
in
easy.
Some ways it's
so
easy for
easy.
Sure and a little bit more reliable. Have you ever completely botched a photo shoot where you've taken heaps of photos and you've got nothing usable, either because you've had your settings wrong on your camera, something's happened to your film, anything like that?
That happened more in digital, early digital, before we understood it. But with film, and we shot transparency film or slide film, you could not make a mistake.
Okay.
Your exposure had to be within a third of a stop. Or with digital, you can butcher a photo completely
you can,
and
save
it.
And you can pull it back in post-production.
I never, that
I know
never
that.
Worked for me. but live photos particularly were very, very hard. So we answered that by shooting a lot. And,
yeah, it must
you know,
have been
it was 36
so expensive.
Shots and then reload. Oh, absolutely.
Would have cost a fortune.
Not a dollar a frame. So
a dollar a frame.
Yeah.
Wow. That I mean, that's incredible. When I think about now, you know, I'll go on a fun photo shoot now, just taking photos of someone somewhere pretty, and we'll take 300 photos, 400 photos,
yeah,
and think nothing of it.
Delete. And then
I sound like a grumpy old person when I say that new photographers don't know how easy they have it, but it's
true.
Very true. But it's easy for me now too. So I,
yes.
you know,
yeah.
go to one of John's shows and I've got an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and a half. I'll take 2,500 photos
Christ.
In that time. Just literally just hold it down.
Well, that's right. You've just got it
it's
on.
It's not costing me any money.
On motor and it
I
goes.
I go back through and you find the good ones.
The gold. And that's the beauty of it, isn't it? You do. You find the gold and it's a bit of a numbers.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
Oh, we got gold.
Bit of a numbers game.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there anyone that you've thought would come up fantastic in a photo that just hasn't, that you just haven't been able to really capture?
I have some regrets over certain photo shoots where I think I could have done better. I've never liked my own photos. So my, you know, biggest advice to anybody aspiring to be a photographer, if you're sitting there looking at a shoot you just did and you think it's the greatest and you're the greatest and it couldn't have gone better, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
you have to be, I'm super critical of my own work.
You have to be a critic, yeah.
I think you have to be driven by that fear that you're not going to get that moment. So now celebrities, rock stars, movie stars are easy to photograph because
they know. They,
even if they're tired or they're hungover, they can do that.
Mm.
You can do your part. They can do their part. It's, you know, photographing real people is probably much harder.
Yeah, because I guess what you said about building the rapport makes it, that's the important part. You need to bring those people out and make them comfortable enough to show their real selves.
Yeah. And, you start slowly and then you start pushing on them. You lean on them a little bit. You can insult somebody sometimes and get something great. Yeah, yeah.
That'd work for Matt,
or you get fired. Absolutely. It's the only way to get anything out of me, I'm afraid. It's time to wrap it up. Just one thing to see us out from me. You're out of it now. You've been out of it for a few years in terms of your full-time career. Do you miss it? Do you miss that lifestyle? Do you miss how hectic it was?
You know, the other morning when Chisel announced they were going out or, again, I still get that I should call so-and-so or call so-and-so and get on that or try and get on that. But I don't, I have to kind of, it comes and goes. So I like to shoot a little bit of that sort of pressure now, but the day-to-day pressure of it, I couldn't do anymore.
Yeah, because you're into the whole relaxed lifestyle these days, aren't you? Fly fishing.
Much more relaxed.
And photographing beautiful locations where you can fly fish, and that's very different.
Yeah, they don't give you any attitude. The fish?
No, none at all.
Yeah.
Well, David, honestly, I'm sure we could talk for another hour, but I think we'll have to get you back again and get some more of your great stories.
Great, love to.
It's an extraordinary life that you've led and that you're still leading, obviously. Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us.
Anytime.